Okay, now we're on. So I'm not the researcher, I'm just reading stuff. The slapstick is a moment of tension. And when you see someone looking like they're getting hurt, but they don't, then you have this conflict in your brain, and then it has to get resolved somewhere. So I'm not sure why it's different for men and women, but just think about slapstick coming out of vaudeville and that era where there was the Depression and there was a different kind of society going on. That kind of humor was a relief for a life suffering. And I can only say for myself that I remember watching The Three Stooges and as a kid, as a boy, and there's something that makes you want to, like, go there or not go there. You know, you want to, like, think about what it would be like to be on either side of the pain with Mo, Larry, and Curly, but then you don't want to be there. So it represents that kind of edge of humor.
Mm-hmm. People, mm-hmm. especially men, get up to give a speech and think they have to tell a joke. The joke is old and tired and irrelevant, and it really doesn't
matter. Guess I won't be doing this talk anymore.
You know, it's interesting. I've started, because most of my patients have dementia, and so I've started laughter groups with my patients.
Yeah, it's such
and
an important part of
it is important.
Yeah.
So, but there is a way in which if we are neurologically impaired in certain ways, we may not be able to relate the motor part of the laughter to the experience of mirth. And given that the frontal brain is the place of experiencing an integrated view of life, it could be that there is a disconnected sense with laughter. There were two really interesting studies that I found, and those were that there was a patient with multiple sclerosis that actually had her brainstem affected. And they found that when she laughed, she had all the motor movements, but not the joyful experience. There was another experiment in which neurosurgeons were doing surgery on a 16-year-old with seizure disorder and accidentally set off part of her frontal gyrus, and she started to laugh. And as she laughed, she experienced so much joy that, in fact, she had an anesthetic effect of the surgery. So this is when people started to really realize that there were two aspects to laughter. And I don't know. I'm very curious whether people with FTD or, you know, vascular dementia, who might also lose part of their frontal brain, have the ability to laugh. And so far, a lot of the patients today were able to laugh and join me.
Really?
Oh. Yes, and to varying extents.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. It's very sweet, isn't it? I think that in a lot of cities in India now, groups of people are gathering at 5 o'clock in the morning to to do laughing yoga together. And sometimes it's just five people, and sometimes it's hundreds and thousands. It's lovely. I'm a lazy butt, so I've never joined them when I went to India.
I just wondered about a situation where someone can say funny things, but yet not laugh themselves.
Yeah, curious, isn't it? Yeah. So many things to know and to be curious about laughter. I wonder where they are. They must be smiling somewhere. My father has always been very funny. He's a punster, but he never laughed at his jokes, but he made everybody else laugh. And I think I imagine that there was an inner smile there.
In the video, she said that crying and laughter were very close.
Yes. That's right.
And can you just talk a little bit more about how close they are and a little bit about that connection?
No, because I don't know. Yeah.
I can give one example that might fit this. As part of the book, we went to Tanzania to look at the laughter epidemic of 1962, where more than 1,000 people came down with uncontrollable laughter. It's been on the radio, people have written about it. And what we found was, it wasn't like there was something really funny going on all over Tanzania at this time. It was much more likely an example of what's called mass motor hysteria. This was a time of change. This was mostly young girls who were taken from their villages for the first time, put in these strict Catholic boarding schools. And there was basically a response to the trauma of the time, where their bodies and their minds had no other concept of how to express themselves. So it's almost like they lost control. And there were some people who started crying and cried uncontrollably. And other people started laughing and laughed uncontrollably. So in some ways, it was just some way for their bodies to show some physical manifestation, the loss of control, and to release it in many ways.
I think it's a... You know, what I said I don't know about was that I don't actually know where the specific brain centers are and how far they are from each other. And in fact, if crying and laughing release the same sort of a cathartic, almost seizure-like response in the brain, and that I truly don't know. I don't know the research on that, but experience shows us, I think therapeutic experience or my experience with patients and myself, I know that one might lead to the other very easily. If I am unable to relate to my experience of sadness, I start to laugh because I know from there I will reach my tears. Now that's a very interesting thing. Turns out that when we laugh, and if you look at people while they're laughing, your neighbor, and I forgot to do this, so thank you, I'll pay you later. That their eyes will be shining. Turns out that the lacrimal gland actually starts to release tears when we start to laugh. So when we laugh very loudly, I mean, and hard and uncontrollably, you know, and in this beautiful way, we'll start to cry. But those are tears that are not associated with the emotion of sadness. That's a brain response. And I wonder if it's like that tidal wave, that fresh wave washing everything clean. But that's, you know, the experience of sadness and that gets released through the experience of humor and laughter that I've seen is genuine connection and attunement to the experience of grief. And I think she may have been working with that with this guy too. Because she named grief at the very beginning. And I wonder if we kept going, whether he would have gone home and actually found grief.
I know you talked about the first session, which I didn't hear, but I think about the times when I'm on the phone, first thing in the morning with a friend or a funny daughter, and they say something that is so funny, I go into a full belly laugh. And I think this must be a huge physiological
thing,
that kind of waking up to a full belly.
There are so very many good things that seem to happen. We know that, and by the way, the last lecture is available to hear on Eat Your Radio, KGNU. It was not videotaped, but it is the whole auditory experience is there for you. But there's been a lot of research done on laughter, and none of it in very big studies. So I cannot speak definitively. However, it seems as though when we laugh, there is a vasodilation that happens. And because of that, we seem to deliver more oxygen to the brain and to the rest of the body. It also appears that there is a decreased cortisol response in people who've laughed a lot. So the stress has gone down. And from these physiological findings, we can conjecture that therefore, given that stress seems to account for most of our illness, and more is pointing out to inflammatory responses as a result of stress, well, laughter might well be the de-inflammatory response. I don't think that there's really anything definitive about the immune system and laughter, but it seems as if, again, as I said, the thymus seems to expand in laughter and contract in stress. We know that Annette Goodhart talks about this, and yet, you know, she died of metastatic breast cancer. The thymus releases T cells that are important in fighting cancer, and yet she still had cancer. So I'm not sure that there is one magic pill, but laughter seems to have absolutely fantastic effects on the body. Norman Cousins talks about how 10 minutes of belly laughter, and in detail he says, in fact, he wanted to laugh, but he was in such pain that he couldn't laugh. But after just a couple minutes, he had an anesthetic response and could continue to laugh. But and then he found that 10 minutes of belly laughter actually gave him hours of pain relief. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous that there are so many small studies that show what laughter does. And I have no doubt that there's, as a physician who's constantly doing risk-benefit analyses, that there's very low risk. The only time I tell my patients there's risk is if they're asthmatic. So I don't want them to get out of breath if they laugh too hard. Or if they've just had surgery, I don't want them to bust their incision. My primary care physician, my dumb doctor, told me to laugh. Yeah. So outside of that, I think it's an incredibly positive response. It seems to, in the brain, release endorphins, oxytocin, brain neurotropic factors, and neurotransmitters, all of which are responsible not only for our sense of well-being and our ability to deal with life's shocks, but also, and resilience, but also responsible for a neuroplastic response in the brain. This is why I really want to do an experiment with my patients with dementia to see if, in fact, as a result of laughter, their need for medications to deal with anxiety and the behaviors related to delusional states and anxiety decreases and their response to pain decreases. In fact, if their medication use decreases. So I've been already conducting this wonderful laughter experiment at one of the nursing homes where I work. Stay tuned. But thank you for a beautiful question. Hello.
Hi.
Just want to say this is Tom Crane, and I have a wonderful conversation with him right before this panel. Tom.
I'm So I was looking at his biography, and he used to pole vault. So he was caregiving his wife, and she went into nursing care. And I was sitting next to her, being a really good social worker, having no clue probably about the disease process of Alzheimer's, which she had. So it was very short term. And I said, I didn't know that Bill pole vaulted. And she looked at me with this gorgeous sparkle in her eyes, and she said, he still does. And we both just started giggling. And I'm laughing hysterically. And the punchline of that to me was that, you know, as if you're in the profession, you get way ahead of yourself, right, with the disease process. You know, and there is, in some sense, a disease process, but not everyone is the same with that.
I think that's brilliantly put, Tom, that not everybody is the same, and it's almost unpredictable.
She was just a light.
Yep.
And I think that there's an informal, and I'm just thinking of an informal social support for a family because they're seeing every memory being erased. You know, and that's very sad. But if someone else can see that person and say, what joy, you know, they brought me. And I've seen that with other people with dementia because I had no history with them. And I'm just saying, I think somehow social supports, in whatever way, animal therapy, whatever it is, but I just think that's what's
great. Thank you. Thank you so much. We do. We do.
We can't see the quixotic nature of our suffering, complete silliness of it. And we can't get the joke.
The Monty Python-ness of it.
Yes.
So the riddle is, why do angels fly? Because they take themselves very lightly. It's a great question. Please come back to us with the answer. I don't know. You know, I wonder if a meditation and a mindfulness allows us to decrease our inhibitions a little so that we can laugh. Perhaps it increases our ability to be attuned to ourselves so that we're freer. Thich Nhat Hanh says, every moment of mindfulness is a moment of freedom, and laughter gives us that same freedom. So what a sweet question.
I can say something about that. I had the opportunity to live in a Thai Buddhist monastery, and the monks after lunch would all get together in one of the rooms and they'd just tell jokes. And I snuck in to see what was going on because every afternoon after lunch they'd just be hysterical laughing, belly laughing. So one of the monks who spoke English told me that they do it as a practice. They get together after lunch and they tell jokes to each other. And that was their kind of meditation. That was their practice as part of their right. Monastery routine.
Oops. I guess that means we're done. Thank you. There must be something about this material that really touched people because this is one of the longest question and answer periods we've had in quite a while and was so delicious. Thank you so much for coming.